What's up, everybody? This is Preston Johnson at Sports Tita on Twitter. I am here on a Tuesday evening. I do not even know the date. November 26th, 27th. This is brought to you, A Petty Moose, the podcast by Fantasy Guru Elite. You can check out their DFS and sports betting content over at the site fantasyguruelite.com. I am excited. I'm disappointed. I feel like it was a really long 2 weeks since we actually did a podcast. It was just the holiday and a lot of games going on. Oh, big three for Michigan State. I guess they're still alive. Sweating out an overtime game here, but everyone wants to watch Indiana Duke, which I think is already a blowout. So maybe it actually doesn't matter, and double overtime would be more fun. I was just explaining for those that are listening on the stream, you'll be hearing this again, but we have a nice little change up for the show today. Matt Lindemann is out at Lindetrain, my normal partner in crime here in the studio, but I asked Colin Wilson at C_Colin1, the number one, I believe. I think there's an underscore in there. He does a ton of writing for Athletic, Action Network. He's basically college football. He does NFL. He's in the Super Contest. He does stuff like that. But he's generally covering college football. And so I wanted to get more opinions about the conference title games that we have coming up this weekend. And there's a few we'll dive into a little more depth, and then we'll kind of do a rapid fire on everything else. But I'm excited to talk with him. And then, as usual, your guys' calls will come in probably around 7:20, maybe a little bit later, depending on how long I keep calling on. But usually me and him can go back and forth for a long time. So at some point I'll just have to, cut ourselves off. But he's actually on the line already. We're good to go then with Colin. Hey, Colin, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. I didn't, if we talk about NBA, it'd be a really short conversation. But if it's football, we could be here forever.
I actually don't even know. Do you have an NBA team at heart that you sort of follow or would root for?
The boys, I have two sons, the boys, we live in Oklahoma, so they had all this KD stuff. They had KD shoes, they had KD jerseys, and we had to throw all that crap out when we went out to Golden State. So we still like the Thunder, we still like Russ, but, that's the team.
Got it. No, I wasn't sure. I know you grew up, like in Arkansas, you didn't really have a team to root for anyway, so you jump on the Oklahoma City bandwagon. I would too. That's fine. Yeah, they're a good team to watch anyways. We have you on for college football, though, so we won't go further in the NBA talk. I was just actually explaining to them kind of how I want to do this is we'll talk over some of the title conference games, the conference title games, I should say, but we're going to do three more in depth, one that's maybe more under the radar, and we'll start with that one, and then I'm going to give you kind of a fire at random the rest of them. If you have any leans or interesting points that you want to throw out, we'll kind of go 30 seconds on the rest of the games, but I'm ready if you are. You good to go?
I'm ready. Let's go.
Awesome. So the first one, Colin was actually in Vegas 2 weeks ago, and I was watching. Actually, I guess it was only like 10 days ago. I swear it feels like it's been so long because of the holiday. But two Saturdays ago, we were watching games, and the night before we were actually playing cards. We were playing poker, and you asked me, I know you have a UAB future to win the conference at 20-1, I believe. And you were asking if you would hedge, if I actually thought Florida International or at the time Middle Tennessee State, whoever ended up being the opponent that they would face, had a shot, and I basically said, if it's Florida International, I think you're good. I think UAB is going to win that game. But if it's Middle Tennessee State, especially because in order for them to get in, they would have had to have beaten UAB just last Saturday, which they did. They won 27-3, I believe. And we're going to get to the details because you actually watched the game back two different times, almost like game film style, which I'll be honest, I think is actually very worthwhile. And I used to do a lot more when I had no kids and I was doing less writing and content for different websites. I did that a lot for the BYU and Utah games. So for people out there that have that time and are maybe focusing just real quick on like a division or a conference or just a few teams, that actually I think goes a long way watching just outside of the quarterback dropping back and throwing the ball or where the running back's going, watching, how receivers are creating separation, what the safeties are doing, who's getting the push up front in the trenches. So with that set up, UAB Middle Tennessee State, the number open 3, which is weird because UAB was laying 3 just a couple days ago on the road. Now, minus 1.5 for Middle Tennessee State, bet down. Tell us your thoughts. Tell us what you're actually going to be doing with your hedge, and then ultimately, what it is that you saw when you were watching the games back.
So at a minimum, I'm going to take Middle Tennessee State back for the initial investment that I put in, which is I think I have $250 on a 20-1 at Westgate to win like $5,000. So what I'm going to do is I'm at least going to get the $250 out of it, but I think at a minimum it's probably going to be $1,000 that I'll put on Middle Tennessee State. That's just to get, make sure that I ensure that there's a profit, that either way, who wins. Now, that I have watched the film twice. I watched that UAB Middle Tennessee State game twice, and I'll probably end up watching it again before I go to bed tonight. I got absolutely nothing out of that game. So let me tell you what happened with UAB. They had two offensive linemen out already to start. They had another one that supposedly fell ill before the game. They had a fourth offensive lineman punch an MTSU player in the head in the second quarter. He was ejected for the second half. So their quarterback, who hadn't played in a month early, he was out there trying to play with a whole bunch of new offensive linemen, and he was just sacked time and time again. Spencer Brown, he is their star running back, UAB's star running back. He's got 1,000 yards on the season. He's got like 15 TDs. He got in warmups, he mysteriously felt some discomfort, took one carry for 0 yards, and didn't play the rest of the game. So I think Bill Clark, the head coach of UAB, is like, I don't know if what we're trying to do here, but we're holding offensive linemen out. We're holding our star running back out. We're just trying to get reps for our starting quarterback that hasn't played in a month. And then on the defensive side of the ball, I know that UAB is top five in the nation in sack rate. They are a vicious sacking team. They did show some of that against Texas A&M. They were able to score against Texas A&M the week before when I was there in Vegas with you.
Yeah.
And you know what? They never rushed more than the down linemen. And I watched every single defensive play. There was never a stunt from the outside. There was never a stunt from the middle. Whoever was a down lineman, that's the only rushers that came in. So literally, they mailed that entire game in. That 27-3, it didn't matter. They had a good first drive to start the game. They kicked a field goal, and that was it. That FIU-Marshall game ended right then and there after that UAB first drive where they knew that Middle Tennessee State had made it, and right there is when UAB and Bill Clark specifically just shut it down.
So there's two interesting points. One, I think it's fantastic that UAB took that approach, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Even and they probably knew, you know, they could just try to win the game, and then they would be playing Florida International in the title game. But they basically said, we don't mind playing Middle Tennessee State. We're basically going to punt this, and we're going to go as vanilla as possible, both offensively and defensively, which is, I think, really key. You brought up the sack rate and the fact that they were only rushing essentially three or four every single play. It was as easy as possible for Stockstill. And the reason now, going back to when we were talking Friday night before the game's even Saturday, I said, you know, Stockstill's probably, is it Brent Brock Stockstill? I think he's he's the best player on the field. And in no disrespect to these two teams, but when you have, I think, a lower level, say a division and conference like this, where there's one player that's better than everyone else and could make a difference, I think it goes further and it goes a longer way than it would be, say, if you had the best player on the field in the SEC or Pac-12, where so much other stuff can, I think, impact the game. He can make a bigger impact on a game at this level than other elite guys can at their position. So my worry is that he can do it twice. He's already done it once. Granted, it was against the B lineups and the whoever, like the Madden 10-year-old kid's playbook. So I'm very intrigued to watch the game. I don't think I'm going to bet it, but based on your information and watching it back, I think a few different things. I think, one, UAB is obviously going to open it up way more offensively, and then I also think that Middle Tennessee State can score anyways, even if they're blitzing. But if they're blitzing and then there are mistakes, turnovers, sack fumbles, it sets up opportunities for points. I thought 44.5. Granted, I just looked, and it's actually moved up since like 2 hours ago to 45 right. And a half. Some 45s out there still. But my best look, I think my number is even 49 anyway. So I think the best look in this game would be over. So I'm curious real quick on your thoughts there, and then we'll jump to a couple of the other games.
Yeah, let me look at that. I have my projected total in here, too. Let me see what I've got. I've got the game at 50, right on the dot, and Bookmaker just moved it from 45 to a 46 here. So I think the over is the player. I've got it rated over. So there's going to be plays that they're going to open it up. It's obviously not going to be the same game plan. It's going to be a totally different game than what we saw the other day. I think for me, and trust me, I'm hitting the message boards. I'm hitting the Birmingham newspapers as much as I can. I need to see if star running back Spencer Brown is playing for UAB, if he's healthy, and I need more information on if we have a full set of offensive line for UAB, and that will determine exactly how much I hedge out of this. I'm at least going to get my investment back.
I believe I have someone I can message that can help you to some extent, so we will be in touch on that. We'll save the best for last. Everyone wants to talk Bama, Georgia. We're going to go second. Yep. I think this is the most intriguing game and one that I've actually put money on. If you still have Northwestern plus 14.5 or 14, I think the number is kind of crazy. I'll give my little spiel real quick, this little summary, and then I want to hear your thoughts. Initially, just from a market perspective, 2 weeks ago, this team, Ohio State, was laying a similar number against Maryland. And that was I actually bet Maryland in that game. And they probably should have lost multiple times. And then even in overtime, Maryland went for two and had the guy open and he missed them. They probably should have lost that game. For 11 games this year, Ohio State's looked pretty mediocre. And then for one game, granted, and I agreed that this line was kind of gotten out of hand, and I thought it probably should have been shorter. They shouldn't have been that big of a dog at home. It wasn't enough for me to bet, which obviously I'm regretting now. And I just don't know why the market – essentially, this number is telling me they're going off of that one game against Michigan and the preseason kind of prior rankings of Ohio State rather than the other 11 games we've seen where they've been pretty bad, especially defensively. And if they get a Northwestern team that can run the ball like a lot of other teams have, I think it's going to be a long day. They're not going to score like they did, I'm guessing, against Michigan was just pretty fluky anyways. So I think everything kind of sets up. Plus, Pat Fitzgerald is just a god against the spread as a dog. Plus, he's a double-digit dog here. So I bet it, but I'm curious what your thoughts are about this matchup.
I think – I don't want to call it a lazy handicap, but somebody might say there's a Michigan letdown here. I mean, you just played your rival. You just beat them, you know, scored 62. I think that's kind of one of the handicaps. I think another one could be is that if Oklahoma beats Texas earlier in the day, that they play the first kick of the day, that if Oklahoma wins that game, they're in the playoffs. So Ohio State may not have as much, you know, need to win. I think if Texas wins that game, then there could be a different motivational. But let's get down to what I cap on, which is just mathematics, pure mathematics. The spread, you're right. You're exactly right. This number is spread is set up as to where the Michigan game is the only game that Ohio State ever played. People forget that Northwestern, what they've been able to do. I mean, some people call it voodoo magic, but really, to me, there's things that you don't see with Northwestern, which is their red zone defense and what they do in finishing drives. So finishing drives is a stat that captures how many points you're getting per attempt past the 40-yard line of your opponent. Northwestern is 24th in the nation in finishing drives on defense. That's outstanding against Ohio State offense that is 117th in the red zone. So Ohio State's going to be able to move the ball. That's a bend-don't-break defense from Northwestern. That's just the way that they play. So I expect Ohio State to get into the Northwestern territory all day, but I don't think they're ever going to be able to – they might get field goals, but unless they're housing explosive plays, they're not going to be able to score. And that's not Dwayne Haskins. If you check explosive rankings, they're around 40th, 50th in passing downs. Dwayne Haskins is not an explosive thrower. He's not a 40-yard deep guy. He moves the chains. He's one of the most efficient in the country. But they're not a deep ball kind of guy, which is going to get them in the red zone, which is one of their worst things. Now, taking a look at the penalties, this is what shocked me. With all the research I did on this game, I could not believe that Northwestern is first in the nation in the number of penalties they've had called against them. They've only had 34 on the season. Ohio State... Wow. 125th in the country in penalties. They've had 98, I believe. Jeez. That's an amazing stat.
That's crazy. So 125th, for people that don't know, is almost dead last, like whatever, five or six teams away. And then first. That's great. And to get through a season with only 30-something penalties, and you know they've played 12 games, if I recall, that's great. That's fantastic. I think I was going to say, I had one point I was thinking about while you were going, and then the penalties thing, it threw it out of my mind. I'll probably think of it here in a second. But I do think... I was going to say the morning game, the Texas Oklahoma, is intriguing. Ultimately, Ohio State knows if they win, you know, they could still move up. This is what it was. They jumped up so high even today, based on that Michigan win. They jumped UCF. Michigan even stayed ahead of UCF, which I think is a sham. But they jumped from 10 to like whatever 6 now. That, you know, who knows? So I think Urban will be preaching we have to win this game either way, even if Oklahoma does beat Texas. But anyway, my number is like, I think it was like close to 10.5. Are you going to be betting Northwestern then too, or at least to some degree?
I did hit Northwestern today. There's an offshore that posted a 14.5. So nice. I'm happy with that one play. I don't want to get too greedy because I do think this is a Northwestern cover. I think this is scarier than the Ohio State. I mean, did you hear the narrative on TV? I don't know if you watched the college football playoff show where they released it. I mean, no. The narrative that they were building was, well, if Ohio State just wants to drop a 50 spot for South, do you think teams can just name a 50 spot when they want to? Like today, we decide we're going to do it. I mean, the narrative's already out there to tell the public that Ohio State can win this game by 50 if they wanted. They can.
Yeah, I think they're just not good enough to, I think, do that anyways. But I do say there's probably something to if they're up to like 10 to 17 or even 20 late in the game, they're probably not taking their foot off the gas. They're probably going to try to score again. That's my assumption. So if you're hoping for, you know, a run it into the pile three times, punt, and have a backdoor shot, it might not be there because Ohio State, instead of punting, is going down and scoring again or something. So there's probably something to the fact that they're going to just try to, you know, score as much as they can, but you can't just do it automatically because people are saying you need to. So there's obviously two different, you know, outlooks on that. third one we'll get to, and then we'll fire the rest out. I'll just let you take it straight away.
Okay.
And there was a question I had about someone that had a hedging opportunity if you had bet Alabama to win the SEC before the season at minus. I'd bet, like, I think minus 113 was my number or something. Someone asked about minus 105, and I thought it was good up until, you know, way bigger. And so obviously they're in a great spot. I'm not hedging anything for the person that did ask that question. If you are listening, let it ride. Bama's a better team. They're a big favorite for a reason, but they're probably a little bit too big of a favorite. I actually bet the total. But Colin, give us your thoughts on this game. I know you dove in deep while you were researching both sides here.
I hit it hard today. 100% agree. Bama's going to win this game, but I'm not really sure they're going to cover. This point spread it really stunned me. It opened up at 10. I said, that's too high. I've got this game at Georgia plus 9. S&P Plus has this game predicted at Georgia plus 4. So when I saw, there was a barrage of five dimes and BetOnline opening this game up. They were posting different numbers, especially in the MAC championship game. They were posting different numbers for the games. And when I saw 10, I was like, okay, I'm going to fire on that. And then another one of the books opened 11.5. I was like, okay, I'm going to fire on that. And then Bookmaker comes out 2 hours later, and they're the ones that posted up to 13.5. And that's when I stopped. And I was like, okay, what am I doing wrong here? Because I've got this game at 9. I know that Georgia's strength is the rushing attack of Elijah Holyfield and DeAndre Swift. And that Bama's, one of their things that they're not very good at is they give up explosive rushing plays. They did against ULL. They did against Arkansas. I've seen teams dice them up on the ground, and that's something that Georgia, they're best in the country at doing that. So, there's other things. These teams are direct mirrors of each other. Everything that you got about Tua, about how he's number one in passing downs and he's number four in explosive passing downs, Georgia's the same on defense. They're number one in defense against passing downs, and they're just as good against explosiveness. Jake Fromm's been excellent with his accuracy lately. They have no problem going to third down. I think when I got down to it, the reason why I believe Alabama is going to win this game is it comes down to the red zone. So I was reading some numbers on Georgia, and it made all the difference in the world to me. So they're 13th in the country in red zone efficiency when they get into the red zone. But the problem is, they're middle of the pack in the FBS. They're around 50th on scoring TDs in the red zone. Yeah. They only score TDs 65% of the time. So they're 90% when they get to the red zone, they convert 90% of the time, but only 65% of the time they're actually scoring touchdowns. So that means you're going to see a lot of Rodrigo Blankenship coming out and kicking field goals. On the opposite end of the field, Georgia's 109th in allowing red zone scoring. So anytime Tua gets into the red zone, anytime he gets past the 40-yard line, they're going to punch it in, and that's going to make all the difference in the world when Georgia's kicking field goals and Alabama's scoring touchdowns.
So Georgia's offense, just to begin here, is humming. I mean, they scored 45 against Georgia Tech, 66 against UMass, I think mid-30s against the trio. Was it Auburn, Florida, Georgia? Actually, Auburn was less, but they still covered. I think they won 27-10. And now that I'm mentioning it, you mentioned there was a first and goal from the one in that game. I actually laid the points, so I was sweating it a little. But I think they went 0-for-4 from the 1 yard line, trying to punch it in to get 7. And it was one of the times they didn't actually take the field goal. But they've definitely had a lot of those situations where they actually are doing, having to just revert to Blankenship kicking it. But luckily, he's a good kicker, and they'll get points most of the time out of his opportunities. But so I bet the over, and so I think it lines up because both teams are going to be able to move the ball ultimately, and obviously Bama's defense. So people say they're not very good. They haven't been tested, which was true. And then all they did when in response was shut LSU out and shut Mississippi State out. Mm-hmm. Granted, they're not very, great offensive teams, but it was still a statement. But as far as, yards per play goes, I think they're, 4.2 or 4.3 per play this year, where in the past few seasons they've been 3.9, 3.8. So they are slightly worse, marginally worse, but they're still top three, I think, in the country or whatever, maybe sitting third or fourth. So they're still elite, but Georgia's offense is elite as well. And so I think it all lines up for Tua to do his thing, and I bet over 63. I actually got 61.5 originally Sunday, and I like it to 63, which is still available now. So for people that are listening, if you want to follow that one, I still like it at over 63. I do think that if it comes – I think it's a really good live bet opportunity as well. If Georgia scores first and Bama has to kind of play from behind and go back and forth, and it turns into one of those games we've seen multiple times, whether it be the playoff last year or past seasons against Clemson, where they're kind of just trading scores. So, I don't know. It's one where I think we'll find out pretty quickly which way it's going. If Georgia can't move the ball all of a sudden and Bama's doing the LSU-Mississippi State thing, then it's a completely dead bet. But I think it should be higher, right up closer to 67 anyways, just straight number. So that's my side in the game. Real quick, I'm going to fire these at you, give you a few seconds. I won't share any of my thoughts on these games until later on in the show, so feel free to just give me your thoughts, and I'll just move on to the next one. We'll just go in chronological order. First bigger game Friday night, Utah-Washington. Current spread, 5, 5.5, total at 45, 44.5.
I'm comfortable with my Washington Pac-12 futures. I don't feel a need to hedge on that, but I am going to look for a Utah at 6.5 or 7 when I think some steam comes in.
It was weird this actually, so I will share a thought here in case no one actually asks later. Utah was a 7-point dog at home like 5 or 6 weeks ago with their starting quarterback and starting running back, and they didn't cover. Right. Granted, I thought they played a better game. They lost by 14. But now, and it opened 3.5, so I laid it with Washington early, but it's gone now. 3.5s or 4s are gone. But they that was a bad number. I still think it's a bad number, actually. It should be closer to 7. So I agree. I think if you're going to be betting Utah as some sort of hedge or middle opportunity, you can wait. That's all I was getting at there. I think you will get a better number than even 5 later on this week. Yep. Next one, I know you have a couple thoughts on this, and it's very intriguing, and we had a few questions about it. The AAC title game, Memphis, Central Florida. Milton gets injured. They win anyways, end up covering anyways, double digits, over 2 touchdowns against South Florida. Memphis kind of humming along. I have a connection to Brady White, so I'm rooting for Memphis. I also have +300 to win the conference from before the season, and I'm probably just going to let it ride completely. So I'm rooting for Memphis, but I think you like Central Florida.
I do like Central Florida at the price of 3. Now, I know this was a 1-point game back in Memphis earlier this season, just a few weeks ago, but you know, the backup quarterback for Central Florida is not—he's not terrible. I mean, he can still—I know he's a freshman—he can still run this offense. I think 7 points on the move. I mean, I first off, BetOnline is the one that put out Memphis +10. Yeah. I think they put that number out there and didn't realize that Mackenzie Milton was absolutely done for the season. So that was easy to hop on. Once it got down to 3, it took some market resistance. It actually might drop a little bit more to 2.5. I'd be interested to see if some more Memphis comes in and actually knocks us down a little bit more. For me, I was happy to come in on Central Florida at 3. That was a big enough gap for me. 7 points is exactly, I don't know what you did, but for me, 7 points is where I put the Mackenzie Milton injury. This game would have been 9 by my numbers before the injury, so 2 was a proper number. So at 3, when the market resistance came, that was a big enough gap for me. I think the number's correct where it is right now.
So, yeah, I actually think it's fair now, too, which is why I think I'm fine just holding my +300. I think I almost bet the under, and it moved a ton. It was 70.5, and it's one of those where it's scary to bet an under in a Memphis or UCF game, but it's already down to 64.5, 65, most of the spots offshore. So that was probably the best bet in the game, and I chickened out and couldn't do it. Real quick, Big 12, Texas-Oklahoma, currently 7.5 or 8. Oklahoma took a little money, moved it up to 8 most spots, even an 8.5 in Vegas. 78, though, the total, way too high, but how do you actually bet an under in an Oklahoma game?
Wow, it's hilarious because I was writing that up today that I love the under here.
Nice.
So Texas won that game against Oklahoma, and they finished with a post-game win expectancy of 8%. 8%. Now, that means Oklahoma would have won that game 92 out of 100 times if they played it over again. Texas knows that they cannot win this ball game if they play at this pace where they score 93 points.
Yeah.
They should not have won the ball game. They can't do it again. If they get into a shootout with Kyler Murray, they're not going to win. They're not going to cover. So if you look at the passing downs run rate for Texas, they're actually like 44th in the nation. They like to run on passing downs, and I think they're going to try to slow it down. I think they're going to try to control the clock. They're going to try to control the line of scrimmage and the pace of the game. They're going to try to keep the ball out of Kyler Murray's hands. That plays well into the 78. I think the reason why I haven't laid into the number yet is because I just expect a barrage of over money to assume that this is West Virginia, Oklahoma.
Yeah, I haven't bet it either. I'm pretty sure like it's supposed to be like 71. It's like a whole touchdown high, but why rush? Why rush? If it starts moving down, then we can grab it, even if you get a 77.5 or something. So I'm following it as well. We'll do two more. I know I skipped the MAC on Friday night, but I apologize to MAC fans. But I'm a Mountain West Conference fan. I also think this is another interesting one, kind of like UAB Middle Tennessee State, where Fresno was laying points in Boise a couple weeks back. Now they're getting points in this rematch in the conference title game. I will be on Fresno in some form or fashion. I'm hoping I get a 3 flat. We'll see. There's only like one that exists right now in Vegas. It's -120. But we'll see. I think at the worst case, it's actually a pretty good tease. I was going to say piece to tease if you're into teasing college football. Most people aren't. But getting 8.5 with Fresno and a total that's supposed to be lower, I think, is maybe worthwhile. So tell us your quick thoughts here on the Mountain West Conference title game.
No money on this game. I do have it rated Boise State minus four. I did have them in the first matchup against Fresno, but Boise needed that game desperately. Fresno didn't really need it. Plus, not to mention, this is the fourth time these teams have played in the last 54 weeks. That's a lot of times. These teams know each other really well, and if I'm not going to get any money in before the game, then I would suggest playing it live, because if these teams know each other that well, then I don't suspect that the ending margin of victory will be more than 7 points. So why not play it live and try to get a plus seven on either side, really?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Actually, it'll be interesting to see. I like when teams have sort of figured each other out four times in 52 weeks. Usually bodes well for an under, and I saw it actually moved up today. So there, I don't know if it's going to keep going up, but if it got to, I think it's 52s now. If it started going up even a little higher, I probably would look that direction on the total. Last one, it should be no big deal for Clemson, but I know this is also the same time. I don't know if you bet this too. When I got some Memphis at 9.5 when BetOnline had those up. They also had Clemson at minus 21, and it's currently 27.5. So tell us your quick thoughts there on the ACC title game, if there's any hope for Pitt.
I passed on Clemson plus 21. I shouldn't have, because I have it power rated 23. Clemson's going to be able to name it, and the reason why is because Pitt is kind of a one-trick pony. They can run the ball really well. They're efficient at running the ball. They're a little bit explosive at running the ball, but they are running into the best defensive line in all of college football. They are going to shut them down. There is a sort of a motivational piece to this, that maybe if Bama keeps it close and Georgia covers, maybe Clemson can be fed the fact that they need a huge blowout here to get the number one seed in the college football playoff.
Sort of a small
angle there. But Clemson is absolutely going to be able to name the number. I don't think the market has seen any Pitt money yet, at least from what I'm looking at least any real money. I couldn't touch Pitt. At 28.5, I don't even know if I would take anything out of my wallet back at that point, because like I said, Pitt hates passing downs. They're terrible in passing downs, and Clemson's going to shut down the rush.
Awesome, Colin. Hey, I appreciate you coming on, jumping on, filling in for Matt for a little bit to talk about these games. I'll give you 30 seconds. Plug what you're doing. Tell people where they can find you.
Yeah, you guys can find me over at the Action Network. My Twitter handle is @_Colin1. We're going to have plenty of bowl previews over there. The Action Network app is also available. I believe you can find that at Sports Action App. The app is great. If you don't have it, you should go ahead and download it, because you can pick plays on games in there, and you can share it with your friends. And once you pick a game, they can send a notification to their phone. It's one of the most amazing betting apps ever. So that's a good place to find me. Again, @_Colin1. And Preston, I'll be seeing you real soon. Thanks for having me on.
I hope that you're, for sure. I hope you're back for, I don't know if you're trying to place a bet, hedging. You're probably going to be able to do it without being here in Vegas. But either way, I hope you're back to watch some football.
See you soon.
Take it easy. He had mentioned last week, and I know we have some other callers on the line. I'm making the producer hold for a second, but Michael, we'll get to you in just a minute. But Colin had mentioned last week, he's like, man, if I get worried by the UAB Middle Tennessee State line, I'm going to have to fly back and bet a few thousand here in Vegas to hedge his – plus he has to cash his bet, too. I think it's – he said 5,000. I'm pretty sure it's more than that. He was being friendly, or maybe trying to keep it less, extreme for people for whatever reason. But anyways, appreciate Colin coming on again, and we'll get to the calls. We have Michael on the line right now, and then Adam on deck. But Michael, you are first. Not sure if you can hear me right now, buddy. How you doing tonight, Michael?
I'm doing great, Preston. And I'll tell you, Colin's a brilliant man. I have to say that. But you know, he's totally analytics. I mean, that's what he said. Those aren't my words; those are his. And I'm a human condition player, so it's we're looking at two different sides of the world here, but they can both take us to the same place. I will say this, I disagree with him on that first game you talked about, Ohio State Northwestern. And the reason I disagree with you, I don't think you can look at Ohio State's entire season. And the reason you can't is because they're at the end of the road. Unless you think they're going to pull up before the finish line, I mean, they're one game away. I mean, they're one spanking away. And I mean, they gave the ass whipping to Wisconsin a couple years ago in the same position. They just beat Michigan. They're feeling good. We know they have top four talent, with, probably talent wise, they're the third most talented team in the country. Anybody in Northwestern, they didn't want a non-conference game. I know you know that. I know they scraped by in a lot of games. They shouldn't have beat Nebraska, shouldn't have beat this team or that team. So if you look at them, you're looking at probably the weakest, other than probably Pittsburgh, which the teams are probably comparable. You're looking at a team that's really not much against one of the best teams in the country that's actually underrated because they underperformed having to have the game. Urban Meyer is their coach. I think 13.5, 14, 14.5 is cheap. I'm not saying they win by 50. I'm just saying they easily cover the number because they're going to bring their best game. If you're betting against them, Preston, or your analytics gentleman there, you've got to believe they're not bringing their best game. Do you not think they're going to bring their best game? Because if they do, they blow them off the map, right?
When you're doing projections, and this is what's this is what's like crazy about this line to me, is Northwestern, like you're right, metrics-wise, they're basically an average football team versus their competition, which is a pretty high strength of schedule within the Big Ten and even out of conference. But they're, I mean, the numbers, like, yeah, Northwestern's been very average. They've escaped a couple games that were close, or they've been outgained but found ways to win anyways, which for whatever reason, Pat Fitzgerald always does. But even with that, and even with me being someone who thought that the number was pretty ridiculous just last week and would have bet the Buckeyes side, right? This should be 10.5. I'm telling you, like, I understand Northwestern's like good numbers say on a neutral field, Ohio State is not 2 or 14.5 points, 2 touchdowns better than Northwestern. And I don't think you can just say, well, you know, they're going to be playing all of a sudden their best possible, because I think that there's more of a sample to look at than just one game. And on top of it, they aren't, I mean, Bosa's the best player, probably going to go number one in the draft. He's not playing, obviously. That's been part of their issue defensively. They haven't been able to stop the run. They still couldn't stop Michigan. So Michigan was able to move in and made a ton of mistakes, probably should have had more points, ended up turning some of those into Ohio State points. There's still no reason for me to think that they can. They didn't do it against Nebraska. They didn't do it against Purdue. They couldn't do it against Maryland. That game there, when they're like a mid 2-touchdown to 17-point favorite, they just haven't even been close. And that's because defensively they're just not nearly as good as they've been in the past. So that's my angle. And, you know, ultimately, though, the Northwestern straight, you know, in a vacuum, like I just have it at 10.5.
Yeah, but unfortunately for you, they don't play in a vacuum, Preston. I mean, this is a championship game, them coming off Michigan, them feeling good about themselves. Hey, and this is after the game. You'll say it's a random sample, and it will be either way. But I think you're going to be shocked when they show up with their best game and Northwestern's not near good enough. I mean, 10.5 is a great number if you go by the year. I'm going by the talent, what they just did, and the fact this is a championship game playing to go to the playoffs.
Well, the 10.5, the 10.5 is based on the talent. I have no reason to, like, all of a sudden say, you know what, Ohio State could be 7 points better than their vacuum number this Saturday, so I'm not going to trust the numbers. That makes no sense. So for me, I just go with the numbers usually every week, all week, and if I can get it, you know, right 53%+ of the time, I'm going to turn a profit. There's no reason for me to, after seeing one game against Michigan where the defense still was awful, to say, you know what, I'm going to give Ohio State a 7-point boost because they might be better this time than the vacuum time. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. So I appreciate the conviction, though, and we don't get into it very much with color, so I like that.
Hey, Preston, yeah. I do too. Hey, there's a window. This is gambling. I take my money over there. You'll take yours. We'll see who gets what and how it got there, because even if it got there, we'll see how it got there. Obviously, blow them out. It would take a lot for that to happen as far as a lot of mistakes by Northwestern for me to be wrong, because, like I said, I believe they blow them out. I think they beat them by you know, 21 at least. Here's my question for you.
Yeah.
Oklahoma, when they get to the – in my dream scenario is Ohio State would jump in and we would get that Georgia – Oklahoma rematch, and that's when I take the big piece on Georgia. I love anybody in the college football playoff against Oklahoma. I absolutely love them. Maybe besides Notre Dame, you know, that's Jermaine Notre Dame. Anybody with, I don't believe with, and maybe you disagree with me, with a defense that bad, I think when you play the elite, that's going to show up, because you're not going to stop them. You can't stop anybody in the Big 12, although there are some good offenses. These offenses are better. And their defense, they'll never stop anybody. I mean, they're winning by 1 point, 1 point, 5 points. Need defensive touchdowns. Sure. I mean, when this blue pops, pal, I'm going to get a big piece, and it's going to make a loud noise.
I will say that it's only a sample size of 2 the last 2 years. I actually think the team that has the best shot to beat Alabama is Oklahoma, because you're looking, again, I know that you hate vacuums, but there's this really high variance situation where an Oklahoma team, if there's one team in the country that can probably go score for score with Bama and then every so often get Bama to make one or two mistakes, it's going to be the team that it's going to be a la – you know, Deshaun Watson and Clemson, they can go score for score with Bama. That's the team I think that actually has the best chance to beat them. I don't think Clemson's offense is that good. Georgia's obviously isn't. Look at the last 2 years. Georgia, and this is the thing, when SEC teams who don't see very good offenses go an entire season without seeing a good one, they see Oklahoma in the bowl game. What happened to Oklahoma, Georgia? Now, Georgia came all the way back because the Oklahoma defense sucks, so you're fine. That point's great. You're right. Oklahoma's defense is horrible. But, I mean, Oklahoma was up 21. Georgia, the defense, the old precious Georgia defense last year, was blown away by the Baker Mayfield, Lincoln Riley offense. Like, they could not stop it. And then it took a fourth quarter of Lincoln Riley, like, playing, running into a pile and punt for them to blow the game. And the year before, Auburn was really, really good. They met, and I think it was the Sugar Bowl. Oklahoma, sure. Same thing. Just absolutely, it was my biggest bet of the bowl season that year. 2 years ago, Oklahoma just railed Auburn, and everyone was wondering why are they laying points against Auburn? The matchups between that Oklahoma or the top offense in the country, we'll say, against an SEC team that just never sees offenses that good, that elite, or even that style. It's really hard to scheme for. As good as your, say, scout team is, or your guys hanging on that are trying to duplicate an offense similar for practice for a month, like it's just tough to do, and it takes it half. And then adjusting at halftime, I think, to absolutely do it. And then you have to credit Kirby Smart and Georgia for doing it. But I actually think Oklahoma, granted, I think a lot of teams are going to say, oh, yeah, because we can score on them. You know, we'll take Oklahoma. But I think that's more dangerous just because defensively that's going to be your toughest assignment too. So I think it goes both ways. Hey, Michael, I appreciate appreciate you calling. Hey, you have one more thought?
Yeah, one more quick thought here. Just in fairness, this is a historically bad Oklahoma defense, probably the worst defense, in my opinion, that's ever been in a BCS game or a playoff game. This is the absolute worst. And these defenses in the SEC, although Alabama and Georgia are down defensively, they were going to be better than anything Oklahoma has seen all year. So I think you put those two things and put them in a pot and stir them up, and you got something you got to weigh up.
Well, that's what they say. But then every year, Oklahoma, it doesn't matter. Last year, Georgia's defense was even better, and they just routed them from the get-go. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't matter. Yeah, technically, Georgia's defense and Auburn's 2 years ago is better than any Big 12 defense, but it doesn't matter. It's just that's the way it's played out. It's only two sample sizes of two. But I think Oklahoma is the team that can do it. Hey, again, Michael, thanks for the call. We have another caller up. Adam, thank I know you. You waited for like 7 minutes. I was getting into it with Michael. Are you on the line still?
Yep.
Yes, you're on. Thanks for waiting, bud. What do you have for us tonight?
Hey, so I think we're supposed to talk about our moose of the year, right?
Yeah, I didn't even mention that at the beginning. It actually slipped my mind. I didn't get Michael's. But, yeah, if you have one, tell us your moose of this season for college football. I'm going to talk about mine at the end. But anyone that calls in, yeah, feel free to share your moose of the season. Go for it.
Perfect. So it's directed at you. It's mostly your fault because I tweeted you 2 months ago about Illinois versus Penn State. Take the points or just money line, and then they're winning in the second half, and then you tweet it, and they lost by 50 still. So yeah. That was my personal petty moose of the year.
Nice.
At you.
I remembered it was like 28-24 in the third quarter or something like that. Illinois was up 4 outright and couldn't cover 28. I believe, too, so I didn't have any action in the game. And someone had actually called in, and the reason I tweeted it, and I don't think it was you, but someone had tweeted in or called in that week and said Illinois is going to win outright. And so I was quote tweeting him. Yeah, it was a tweet.
Yeah, no, that was me.
And it was you. So that's what you're saying. Okay, yeah. So it was you. So you can blame me for that for sure. I'll take full responsibility. But in mid third quarter, I was trying to give you props. Like, what the hell? This guy
was right.
A 28-point dog could win this. And then I think it was 42 straight for Penn State, and three were like defensive touchdowns or something. So I'll take credit. That's fair, completely. But I was trying to give you props initially, saying, man, he called it. Like, this is 28-24 with 6 minutes in the third or whatever it was.
Right, and then still lost by 40. So.
Yep, that's usually how it goes. I apologize. We call it the hashtag cheetah jinx has been around for like 5 years. That's a classic example. Usually it's for stuff that's less significant. Like, I'll just be watching a game for fun. I'm like, wow, Marc Gasol is really feeling it tonight, and then he'll break his foot. Like, that's usually the cheetah jinx. In this case, it actually costs you money. So I'll take you out to dinner if you're ever in Vegas or something.
No, no big deal. It didn't cost Lovie Smith any money. He got his extension.
Yeah, how does that happen? But, you're an Illinois fan then, right?
Yeah.
I'm guessing you're not thrilled with that.
I think it's okay because what are they? Who else are they going to get? So who knows? But anyways, my question is a football question. A few weeks ago, we were talking about 2-point conversions and the math says a go for two when you're down by 14, and that's fine. But I want to know how come nobody goes for two when they're up one to go up 9. Because the math seems to me like you have a very high reward of going up 9 and a low risk of still, you know, being up 7. So why doesn't that ever happen?
I'm fairly certain the Bears did it 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. But, yeah, it definitely doesn't happen very often. And they did it more because they're just going for two, I think, just almost every time now. Unless they really can't. Like, say it was to, you know, go up 3 or 7, like something key like that, and they'll take the kick. But it ultimately comes down to this. If you're more confident in your offense scoring the two – or going up 8 and defending the two, and then you have to take into account that there's like the whatever it is, 4-6% chance your kicker missed the extra point. So you have to just gauge, you know, what's going to be the higher probability. Generally, I would guess that teams are to your point, why don't they do it more? It's, you know, they're too conservative, or they trust their defense more, and that's a little kick. And also probably they're afraid of the scrutiny. But a lot of the times, especially this day and age, I agree, the offense has a better shot at scoring. And ultimately, I would do it, especially, it's going to be matchup dependent, who you're facing and stuff. But, yeah, I agree. I think it could be done more for sure.
It's just like we're flipping a coin, but the one – if you get that two-point conversion, you win the game. You know, it depends on how much time's left. But going up nine, it just seems like a no-brainer that where everyone was praising, oh, man, they did the right thing when they're down 14. But we're not even talking about this other situation that seems even more like a slam dunk that they should be going for two every time.
Yeah, no, it's totally fair. I think it's going to be a discussion, though, just to like a future point here in regards to going for two and analytics. Like it'll be, especially with betting becoming more popular and legalization in states, like this will be a thing that's discussed, I think, in more detail as time goes on. For sure, each season it'll happen more and more often, and people will be like, why did they do that? And then you'll see people writing about it or conversations on Twitter about Eli Manning and the Giants going for two or not, and guys saying that they wouldn't, even though the numbers and game theory dictates they should. And so it'll be interesting to kind of follow as things evolve going forward.
Well, that's all I got, unless you got nobody else waiting on the line, but I'll let you go.
Oh, we don't have someone waiting, so if you have a question, fire it away.
Okay,
and then
I got a brand new thing. We're going to switch to basketball.
Okay.
All right. I want the rules to change. Like, I want to get rid of the foul out or add an extra foul in college basketball, right?
Uh-huh.
So basketball is the only sport in the world where you're eliminated for a counting foul. And it completely changes the game. You got to take them out in foul trouble. You got to do this. I think we got to get rid of the foul out or add a sixth foul in college. Got to do something because I just don't think it's right.
All right. I appreciate the call, Adam. I'm going to share a couple of thoughts. I wasn't anticipating this, but my initial reaction, two things. One, you're probably on the right track in the sense that teams are going a lot faster and the rules are being, I guess, more, offensive prominent, like they're offensive friendly, and especially in the NBA, like they're calling more fouls, and then teams are just going way faster, playing more possessions, and so they've never actually adjusted fouls for per game, because even though there's more possessions being played and more fouls being called and whatnot. So I think to that degree you might be onto something where if you were to compare fouls per game versus possessions and fouls called in the 80s and 90s versus today in both college and pro, you'd have an argument there. I'm not sure that it's just like this. I kind of disagree where just because it's one where you could foul out, it's all right. It happens. It's all right. If you heard the beeping of the phone, it was close. You never know when they're actually going to actually hang up. But the I just don't think it's fair to change a rule that's just been there forever. But I guess football, though, there are rules where if you can get disqualified. I mean, fouling's the way that they're disqualified, but now every time in college there's a hit that's even close to head-to-head or targeting or whatever, unless it's a Redskins game on Thanksgiving, you're going to be out of the game and probably suspended even another half after that. So, I mean, there are ways that people are getting kicked out of games. Hockey has the, penalty box for multiple minutes. There's probably a way. Soccer, two yellow cards or a red card, you're out. So I would disagree that it's the only sport that can happen. There's fouls in soccer and you're eliminated, and then actually a red card at some point. I don't follow soccer close enough, but you can't play a following match once you hit a certain amount of yellow or red cards and within a certain tournament or whatever. So that can even – you can't even play. Like, it would be weird if, LeBron fell out and he wasn't allowed to play the game the following night, and that happens in soccer. So I would say I disagree with that point other than you go to, the logical viewpoint is, hey, there's a lot more possessions. There's more fouls being called. Everyone's playing faster. Can we do six fouls in college and do seven in the NBA? And you might have an argument, in my opinion. So that was interesting. Real quick, for Michael, who hopefully actually listens back to this, or maybe he's listening. Oklahoma's historically bad defense, the worst that we've ever seen. There are 40 teams worse than them this year, for what it's worth. They have the best offense by far, so it's not like it really matters. They're almost double their opponents this year in net yards per play. It's the exact same efficiency as the team last year, defensively. I know they were supposed to be better. They ended up firing the defensive coordinator. They've been lit up the last 2 weeks by teams that are pretty good. And the fact that there's 40 teams worse than them this season alone, whatever you want to go with, means they're not the worst historically ever. That's maybe seen a BCS game. I still don't believe it. I know you said it's a team that's gone to the playoff or BCS level. I don't think they are the worst. We could go back and look, like Hawaii was in a game once against Georgia, and I'm sure they were worse. And then you actually adjust for schedule. They're playing the best offenses every other week, right, within the Big 12. And there's still 40 teams that just rank without adjusting for schedule worse than them defensively this year. So when you adjust for actual strength of schedule, I'm sure their net yards per play would be dropping significantly to where they're probably like, you know, a 50-ish to 60th best rated defense. And when you're scoring enough, you know, ultimately it doesn't matter sometimes. So I'm very intrigued now. One, if Northwestern Ohio State's going to be as ugly as he predicts. And then two, if Oklahoma gets in, I've actually said, I mean, in the past, the last week and a half, that I thought Oklahoma has the best chance of just upsetting them via the high variance nature. People that, getting to my petty moose of the year, people that follow my Moneyline round robins that I post and the Moneyline dogs, I generally bet ones that I think are just really high variance where they could lose by 30 or win the game outright. And they pan out a lot of the time. That's why I'm round robbing them. They're huge plus money this last week. We went 3-3 on them, had a double-digit UNLV, won outright. BYU should have up 20. And Kansas State up 17 with like 8 minutes in the fourth quarter, lost. But those are ones. And the other one that lost was overtime was UNC. And had I gone 6-0, I finally went and looked what it cost me. It was $640,000. And there was all three of them were huge favorites late in the fourth quarter, and even bigger if you go to the middle of the fourth quarter. So that was my money-wise biggest swing this season, was those Moneyline dogs. But it goes back to this point with Oklahoma, Bama. Like, if you're going to take that's a huge Moneyline shot for me. I mean, you know, I probably wouldn't be taking Oklahoma plus, you know, 16 and a half or 17, whatever it would be, very often as I would just betting Moneyline, and then knowing that, you know, if they can't score on Bama, they can't defend Bama, then they're going to get blown out by, like, there's very little times I think that it's landing 0-16 that makes it worthwhile taking the points versus a money line. And there's going to be a lot of games like that. So going back to my example this weekend, before we get, I know Bob, you're on the line, you just called in. I only bet one side in that game. I only bet Kansas State. All those other money lines, I didn't even have money on the spreads. And there's people out there that are round robining the spreads that went 6-0 against the spread. And a ton of people were thanking me this weekend. Just so you know, I only had bet one of those. I only thought Kansas State was worthy of an actual bet against the spread. They're just all these high variance, you know, vacuum type games where, you know, they're probably going to be winning the game outright a lot more, especially beginning of the season when there's a lot of weird new stuff, non-conference, or late in the year, last week of the season, when there's some teams that really aren't playing for anything, don't care, rivalry games, right? So I just thought those were good opportunities. I originally had 9 written down too, and I cut it to 6 just to save people money, I thought. The other two were Wake, Baylor, and then I had Louisville there as a huge one, but they would have lost, but Baylor and Wake would actually won too, so we got them like 5-4. It's just crazy how those work out. And so Oklahoma, I think, is just a perfect example of that. If you're wanting me to kind of predict it in advance, I hope Bama wins. I have a ton of money on the plus 250 from before the season on them to win it all. So I'm full Bama. I actually would prefer a team like, had it been Michigan or whatever, or even Georgia or, you know, Ohio State for sure, versus Oklahoma. So anyway, Bob, I appreciate you waiting for a minute there. We're going to take your call and wrap up, but let us know, one, your moose of the season, your worst beat of the season, and then what question you have for me tonight.
Hey, Cheetah, what's up? As far as worst beat, probably that block punt at the end of that Florida Atlantic game against, who was it, Air Force,
yeah.
Yeah, that was a killer. And the other one, it's really not a petty moose, but it just drives me, or not a moose, but it drives me nuts, that Fresno game against Minnesota, because I had the under on Minnesota season wins, over on Fresno. I had the game flat. They drive all the way down the field, and they decide to let the running back throw it. I'll never understand that.
Yeah.
So it really wasn't a moose, but it still just goes. Hey, I got a question for you. I'm on, first of all, you did a great job in your season win totals and futures and stuff, and they worked out great.
Thanks.
But my question is just more, it's just your thought process with something, because I noticed like a lot of times during the year, like, let's say, I'll just give an example. I don't have a hardcore one in front of me. It happened many times, you know, but let's say we had like Iowa over, and then we also had Iowa to win their side of the conference, and it would be like eighth week, and you would put a bet up against Iowa. And it was just hard for me to rat, you know, because I needed Iowa to win the other ones. I know it probably, logically, if you got the advantage, you should bet Iowa, or you should bet against them, even if it's against your kind of prop. But I just kind of want to get your thought process about how you are able to mentally, you know, when you're making picks, separate your season wins from just what's the bet, the best bet that particular week.
Yeah, no, that's actually a really good question. So I'll start with this. it helps when you have. So I actually haven't tallied the total on this. Someone sent me a total that said they went like 33-15, and then there were some pushes and a few cancellations with canceled games. So they did really well. But when you have like 40 something and then plus some no action, so 50 season win total bets and a few conference futures in there, like there's so much action, I just try not to follow it. I just trust that, you know, hey, my numbers before the season, you know, and I only bet the season win totals probably like a week before the season started, and they've moved quite a bit. But there's still huge edges, I think, to be had, even whether you're betting them early summer or right before the season. And so I'll bet them. And so I try not to really use that and let it dictate the decisions I'm making during the season. Maybe the time I would say maybe it does would be the final week. Like this last Saturday, if there was basically, say, I had an over where it was like a coin flip game and I didn't really want to feel like flipping a coin and have the team win this Saturday, I'll just bet the other side and basically, you know, juice out or take, if I can break even, if, you know, one side's plus money slightly or taking plus points, maybe we get lucky on a close win and they middle. There's going to be some chances. There wasn't really any that set up that way. Anything that was close was a push at worst. I think there's like three of those Saturday. One of them, like La Tech, for example, lost as a double-digit favorite at home. That was one. Middle Tennessee State was another where we were like free-rolling and they ended up winning. So there wasn't really any situations this season, but there have been in the past. And I'll just think about it and maybe make adjustments just that final week. But going to your example with Iowa, they were underrated entering the season, and I think I was correct with that. And then I thought they were overrated after like 7 weeks or whatever it was. So I bet against them a couple times. I think one was either the Minnesota-Indiana game, and I might have bet against them one more time. It was the Penn State game. I laid it, but which actually covered because I got 4.5 early. Penn State ended up winning by 6. Thankfully, they got that interception at the end. I think I was the week of just playing the numbers, how they should be dictating that week only, not really concerned about the season win totals. So that might be tough. I hadn't really thought through that might be tough for people, like if you were following everything. It's tough to be like, why is he betting against Iowa if we need them to win the game for the season win total or for the future? I understand that, but it's more, I guess, something that I just tried to put behind me, kind of figure – treat them as individual events or separate events. And I'll do that, honestly, for even within one game, or I like a side or a total before the game, and I'll bet against that at halftime, as long as I'm not maybe setting up a chance where I can get middled. But there'll be opportunities where I have to just treat it as a separate event where the stats and numbers from the first half dictate a play here, even though I bet the other side before the game. And so there's going to be times where I'm even doing that within a game, let alone, you know, a season. So I things change a ton from, you know, before the season to, like, say, a week 7, week 8. So anyway, it's an interesting concept, though. I think that's something I can maybe, break down as I'm doing plays. Like, hey, I know we have, you know, Iowa over. I know if you bet the season win totals, we're in this spot. But this is why I still like the side or the play or whatever. So I'll keep that in consideration going forward.
Well,
for sure.
I kind of figured that was your thought process. And I think, you know, that makes the most sense. You know, that's the way you should do it. I was just, you know, as it was coming up, I'm like, you know, just as kind of the betting fan in me, I'm like, man, I really hate to make this bet here because I really could use Iowa. You know, we were sitting on that 10-1 and we were looking pretty good, really.
Yeah, that's hard to lose that, actually.
Exactly. But thanks a lot. I just wanted to get your thoughts. I love getting the strategy side of it and seeing exactly how you're thinking when you're doing this. So thanks, man.
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate the call, Bob. Yeah, I think the strategy side of it is just none. Like, I make the bets before the season and not really worry about it. So this weekend I have a bunch of conference pending titles, and one person asked me to go through them for the show anyway, so I had marked this, but it kind of segues into it. You know, I have Utah 20-1 to win the Pac-12. We have another caller? Yeah, we'll take it. Yeah. And I also have Washington, so that one's, I'm basically letting it ride. I'd bet both to win their divisions and then to win it all, so win the Pac-12. But another one was the Memphis one. I'm letting that ride. Someone else, I have Bama cheap, almost pick, basically. They're going to let that ride. And the other one that lost was, I had West Virginia at 8-1, which was dead now once they lost to Oklahoma. And then the other one, I actually had bet Boise. I thought they were going to be a lot better than they ended up being this season. And that's one where I'm probably going to be betting Fresno +3 if it gets there. Maybe we middle, but I'm treating it again. It's a completely separate event. I'm not betting Fresno because I have a Boise future to win the Mountain West. I actually think Fresno's the right side anyways, and I actually bet Fresno at -2 a couple weeks back when they faced each other. And then I don't think I have any other ones that are pending, so I was going to go through those quickly. But, yeah, I think you just have to treat them as separate events until basically the very end, whether it's the last game during a season win total or or a futures bet within a division or a conference. And we had the Iowa 10-1. It was to win the West. They were more like 40-1, 35-1 to win the Big Ten, actually. It had a shot. We were in a good spot. Didn't end up getting there. But that game, it was 14-10. Northwestern beat them on the road as a double-digit dog. And, again, the guy, Michael, listening. Northwestern, bringing him up again for you. Anyways, Blake, I know we have you on the line. We're going to wrap this up after Blake's call. How are you doing tonight? What do you have for us? And tell us your moose of the season or bad beat of the season.
All right. How you doing, Preston?
I'm good.
I was just going to pretty much ask you if you think the public has gotten the Bama spread correct. I know it opened at 10.5, and I just tuned in 5 or 10 minutes ago, so you may have already talked about this, but now it's up to 14, as you know. And do you think that's pretty much what it's going to close around, or do you think it'll keep going to Bama's favor? And what do you feel about the current the current lineup?
Yeah, for sure. We talked about it with Colin. He was at the beginning of the show. So if you fire it up, and it's like 10 minutes in is my guess, we go over this game. I personally bet the over at 61.5 through 63. I have money on all of those numbers in there. But the spread is too high for sure. There's no numbers that really, I think, any model out there that says Alabama should be minus 13.5. I haven't seen 14s, maybe where you live. I know you're down in the South. Maybe they're jacking the number up even more at some of the local shops. But I personally will be betting Georgia. I just haven't rushed to it because it's been moving up. Maybe I get plus 14. I think over in Georgia is the way to go if you're looking at side and total. I could see if it sits 13.5, it just kind of sitting here the rest of the way, which seems kind of crazy for a high-caliber game like this. But I think it'll draw two-way action at 13. So as like an odds maker, if I was to put a number up, even if I think this should be like 9, putting up something in that 10.5 to 13.5 kind of gap in there seems like it would draw two-way action. So it might just sit here, to be honest. It might not really move one way or the other. I'll just kind of be following along. But even so far, I don't look at these splits very often, but it says 54% of the bets on Bama, 46 Georgia. So it's pretty even keeled so far. You have a preference or a side that you want to bet?
Well, I'm actually an Alabama fan. And I live in Alabama, so you're correct. The local bookies down here, they do jack the lines up a little bit. But even at 14, as a Bama fan, I'm a little biased, but I just feel like the way they've been rolling this season, it's just kind of hard to – if I had to bet the game, I would definitely take Bama with the points.
Georgia, you mean?
Do I know?
You said Bama with the points. You meant Georgia with the points, right?
No, Bama minus 14.
Oh, so you'd lay the points. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. I just feel like they've been rolling. There'd be no reason to bet against Bama at this point of the season. I think they beat every team by 22 or more. So, and I know Georgia's a different animal than anybody they've really played, other than maybe LSU. But the other point I was going to bring up is the bad beat. I bet Arkansas plus 30, I believe it was, against Auburn,
and
Auburn ended up giving up a late trash touchdown, and they ended up covering by 1 point. That was probably the worst beat of the season. I mean, I've had several, but that's just the one I remember the most. That was pretty bad. And I had I don't do the discipline 3% and 5% bets like a lot of you good gamblers do. So I had a lot of money on that game. So that one stung pretty bad.
Going down, I didn't have action in the game, but breaking that game down, it was more than just Auburn scoring at the end. But if I recall, like metrics wise, think of it this way: Arkansas, I think, outgained Auburn by 80 or 90 yards. They held Auburn 210 yards, and they gained like 290, and they couldn't cover plus 30. Like there's so many things have to go wrong to not cover plus 30, outgaining your opponent by 80 yards, and 80 yards not in a a game where they each get 700 yards, but a game where they only gave up 200. That's one of the beats. That's like a low key. I think I actually tweeted that night when I realized what had happened. I was diving into box scores to update numbers and stuff for the following week. And I think I tweeted that was low key, probably the beat of the season, but no one actually thinks it because one, not many people probably bet plus 30 or minus 30 in that game, but Auburn kind of had it in control the whole way. If you were just looking at the box score and looking at the score, right? So, and all of a sudden, okay, they won by 31. It was close. But really, like, Arkansas had actually, outplayed Auburn in that game, but couldn't cover 30. So I agree. That is definitely one of the top mooses of the season.
Yeah, especially against Auburn. I think Auburn was favored by only later on in the season against Liberty. They were only favored by, like, around 28 points.
Sure.
So it's just crazy that the spread was 30 and Arkansas couldn't cover. They they missed the cover by 1 point, but it was just bad.
Hey, man, I appreciate your call.
I appreciate you.
Yeah,
have a
no
good
problem.
One.
You take it easy. Nice. We went a little late. I had a couple questions here I was going to get to, which I'll just do just for the sake of trying to get through them, but we went almost a whole hour, so a lot to listen to. But it is the last week of the season. We'll probably do some bowl stuff, and we'll be doing more college basketball and, you know, NFL as that wraps up as well. But there's a question about Dr. Pepper. Thanks, Jay Soul, but we'll get to that another day. Someone asked about UCF, the backup. We talked about that. Robbie, if you're listening, Colin broke it down earlier on in the podcast a little bit. Moose Rec, Iowa plus 10, game of the year against Wisconsin. If you'd bet that before the season, that was one I had. My game of the year bets went 19-10, but that was one that we should have had. They were winning the game until the final few seconds, but couldn't cover plus 10 because of another turnover right after they gave up the touchdown to Wisconsin, and Wisconsin broke a run when they were just trying to run the clock out. That was an ugly one. Here's one from Tony. So this is there's a few other ones real quick. Clemson Wake under 61. UNLV SDSU over 52. I actually had a piece of that. Illinois plus 28. So here's the one. NFL from Tony. This is the one I wanted to make sure I get to since it is a separate subject. We haven't touched on it yet. He said, at what point do you consider backing Cincinnati? Denver minus 5 right now seems like a huge over-adjustment. Driscoll probably a better option than Dalton anyways. I kind of laughed at that, but I like Driscoll a lot in college. So I don't necessarily – I mean, I disagree probably. Like, Dalton's probably better, you know, long-term than Driscoll. But it's one of those things. Like, maybe, you know, maybe it sparks Cincinnati, even though they've had some other injuries where – they're able to just kind of, you know, move the ball. I think they did score. Granted, it wasn't – I think it was more than just – it was just one touchdown. The game was over against the Browns anyways. But I'm pretty sure he moved the ball decently in that second half. They were going pretty vanilla. Now he has a week to prep. I don't hate it. I will say I'm looking up my numbers right now. So I apologize. I need a second. I have this would be 0.9. Sorry, guys. Oh, yeah. So I would have this as Cincinnati like a 1.5-point favorite with Dalton at home, and they're getting 4.5, actually 5 a few spots. So so I haven't actually looked. I have like a player evaluation. Granted, the data on Driscoll is really thin, but even just like direct average replacement from Dalton, I don't imagine 6.5 points. And, you know, this hasn't even really moved. It just kind of opened 4.5, and it's been sitting there. So it could be that once the limits go up, some sharper groups are going to back Cincinnati here. It'll be interesting to see. Denver's been on this high as well. I think there might be a little bit of a kind of market overreaction to their win against the Chargers on the road, then upsetting the Steelers at home. Two of, I think, the top three teams in the AFC, at least. I think they're both better than the Patriots this year, and then the Chiefs are obviously in the mix. So that's remarkable. Maybe Denver's just playing that much better. But I would definitely be taking plus 5 before, you know, anything else in this game. My guess is that the drop from Dalton to Driscoll, outside of like the humorous, maybe he's even better. It could be. But even just like to the average quarterback, like Dalton's probably something like 2.5 to 3 points. So even then, like, yeah, this should still be under a field goal and you're getting 4.5, 5. So I agree. I think it was a good point, Tony. And I appreciate you throwing it at us, even with some NFL during conference title weekend. That's it. We're going to wrap it up. Jared, thanks for sticking around a little late. I appreciate it. This is A Petty Moose, Fantasy Guru Elite. Appreciate everyone's support. We'll talk to you next week.